I love a beautiful lawn. You love a beautiful lawn. Everybody loves a beautiful lawn, but they don't love how long it takes and how difficult it can be. And that is where True Green comes into play because it's the easiest and most affordable way to get that beautiful lawn. Let's be real. You've got plenty of other things to do in your free time than focus on your lawn care. So let True Green take care of all of that hard work while you get to do everything else that you want to do, like go play golf. Here's what you need to do. Visit truegreen.com, okay? It allows you to do you. Let them do the lawn care. And if you visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, that is all guaranteed. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. It's truegreen.com. Get started now. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. And that's because the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe has some great features like the available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, and much, much more. So think about those places that you want to go, the things that you'd like to do this weekend, and where the Santa Fe can take you. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Freaking first cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, joined today first by Sia Najat. Sia, happy post-Thanksgiving and hello.
Hello to you. Happy to be back with you all on a Monday. It's going to be just a kind of some broken Mondays for us until probably early January, but I'm happy to be with you all today. Let's go.
Greg Ducharme is here. Greg, good to see you.
What's going on, boys? I hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving. A lot to be thankful for this year, including you guys and everybody who watches and listens to us here on the First Cut. So it was a great weekend and happy to have a little DFS to talk about tonight.
Yeah, which we certainly will. But alert, alert, breaking news. The big cat, Tiger Woods, is out. Withdrew from the Hero World Challenge, says in preparation for this string of events that he's going to be playing in December, he has developed plantar fasciitis. See, have you ever had that?
I haven't, but you know, covering the NFL, it's a very common football injury, and it can be debilitating depending on what grade of plantar fasciitis you have. I don't know, Rick, it sounds almost like you've had it.
I have. It stinks. I'm not a football player. But I've had it.
That's surprising.
I know, shocked to the entire world out there that I'm not a professional
baseball player, though, Rick.
That's right. So, as far as I'm aware, the only treatment, I guess, if it's really bad, you could get surgery, but it's like rest. Like you have no other option but rest, and it is very, very painful.
Yeah, I've heard it. It's actually very common in golfers too.
Yeah,
not so much at the PGA Tour level. You don't hear it very often, although injuries don't necessarily have to be divulged to the public, but it's very common among recreational players, and apparently it feels like you're walking on, you know, a stone in your heel, which is very uncomfortable. I can't help but think this comes from, you know, a little bit of an increased usage as he's trying to get ready for this little run. That'd be my guess. So yeah, it's disappointing to see, but I guess we're going to have to wait a week at least.
Yeah. So as of right now, on DraftKings, he has not been replaced. So Sepp Straka is going to take Tiger's spot in this event. We were joking before we went hot. Massive upgrade to go from the, you know, 1200th ranked player in the world, Greg, to the 29th ranked player in the world. I mean, come on. The field got significantly better today.
Yeah. One more recently. yeah, so it's an upgrade, but a sad one. And in all seriousness, it's a downgrade.
Yes, of course. Now, he has not been added, Sepp Straka, I'm speaking about, Sia, to DraftKings yet. I imagine that is going to happen when the guy who is the needle withdraws from a tournament in your DraftKings, you should probably put his replacement in. So haven't seen Sepp Straka added to the field yet. So we are going to roll with the 19 that we have currently in the field as of this recording or as of us being live on YouTube.
Yeah, and I guess you could make the argument. Obviously, Tiger is the big draw to this Hero World Challenge. But from a DFS standpoint, I don't know how many people would have been willing to play him. So given Sepp Straka's upside that we've seen specifically over the last year, once he does get added, which I imagine he will at like 6,000 or 6,100, whatever it is, I mean, he does add a little bit, in my opinion, he adds a little bit more from a, just a pure roster construction standpoint than maybe, it pains me to say this, but maybe Tiger Woods would have. So it's just something to consider from a DFS standpoint. This might make it a little bit more interesting, an extra person to consider in your six-man team.
Yeah, and Greg, it's going to be a little bit weird because you're basically rostering like 30% of the field in every single lineup, six out of 19 or 20, maybe if we get Sepp Straka added to this at some point. So there's going to be a lot of outrageous ownership numbers. You're going to see somebody like 52% owned or something outrageous like that. So we've got to recalibrate our expectations a little bit.
Yeah, I think there are a couple areas where you have to recalibrate, not only with ownership, but also when you look at past results, it's really important to remember that it's only a 20 player field.
Right.
So I found this really interesting as I was looking through, and rickrungood.com, as always, does a great job of this. But you look at what I was looking at, what guys have done in their strokes gained total for the week. So you see Xander Schauffele has a tied 12th, a tied 10th, and a tied 8th. And any week on the PGA Tour, you'd look at that and say, oh, he's played great here. But he's only gained strokes in one of those events, and it was less than one. So that's a really important thing to consider. And I would be looking more at the strokes gained total than I would the numbers, because the numbers will deceive you. And look, if you finish in tied 10th in this event, did you play poorly? Not necessarily, but it doesn't necessarily mean either that you love the golf course.
That golf course, Albany, it's in the Bahamas. It's an Ernie Els design. You don't see that all the time, Sia. And they added 100 yards to it from last year. So now the scorecard reads 74-14. It's a par 72. And it is resort-style golf.
Yeah, and so we're going to see, unless the wind really picks up, which it could, but honestly, even if the wind does pick up, you're going to see some low scores out here. And I'm going to be looking at a lot of the scoring stats. I mean, I think, you know, all-around game obviously comes in here. And, you know, around the green game, putting on Bermuda, all of that's important. Of course, approach, wedge play, off the tee distance. But with all of that said, I'm going to put a pretty big emphasis on some of these scoring stats as well. Birdie or better, DraftKings points, fantasy scoring, whatever the case may be. I think that's going to be important. Strokes gained par five is of particular importance in this one as well.
Can we share my screen here, Troy? We'll throw the metrics up from rickrungood.com. And Greg, when I think of Albany, I think of sands. There's over 50 bunkers out here. Water is going to come into play. You miss some of the fairways. There's only a little bit of rough. Then you're in the sand again, kind of that. Remember the Patrick Reed video, which all the forensics experts have looked at? Like that's what I think of when I think of Albany.
Right. You miss a fairway, and if you don't hit it into a bunker, you're kind of playing, it's hit or miss. You have those tufts of grass in there, some dunes and some mounds, which definitely gives it a cool look. But for the most part, it's playable off the fairway. Which I do think puts an emphasis on distance over accuracy. And you see that in the model.
Yeah.
But the first thing that comes to my mind is what happened last year with Sam Burns. And he has control of the tournament and misses into one of those really deep swales. And all of a sudden, before you know it, he's playing, he's playing whatever, ping pong across the green back and forth, and it costs him the tournament. And so you have some of those situations where you have right lies, but you're also well below the surface of the green. Typically that comes into play on one side. You may be 10, 12 feet below the surface of the green, which is severe, and it makes for some difficult decisions. And I think that's why you see in the strokes gain around the green, that it's more important here than anywhere else on the golf on the PGA Tour. That's a really interesting thing to me. And there are a couple of things that come into play with this. One is what I just talked about, the difficulty around the greens. But that's also interesting because of what Sia said, right? We expect to see some low scores out here. Mm-hmm. So how does that balance? Typically, you see around the green get more important as golf courses get more challenging. Not so much the case here. But the other thing that I find to be really interesting is looking at who's had success here. And you have a lot of great ball strikers. But what does that really mean? Is that because the field is full of really great ball strikers? You only have 18, 20 guys, something like that. This year it's 20. So that's kind of a, because of the size of the field and because of the players in the field, it makes for some interesting little caveats.
Interesting little caveats will be found everywhere as we go through this currently 19 player field. We'll do that and much more. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners. It's a really fine line creating workout clothes that are great in the gym and workout clothes that are also great to look at outside the gym. And Vuori has threaded that needle. They are designed to work out in, but they don't look like it. They don't feel like it. And it's incredibly comfortable stuff, whether you are running, training, swimming, doing yoga, running errands, lounging around the house. It really doesn't matter. These are versatile clothes. You'll find me often in the men's Sunday performance jogger because I like the jogger situation that goes on down at the bottom, but they're very comfortable. They've got a little bit of a shorter inseam, so they're not as bulky as other pants or other joggers that I have seen out there, and I've really enjoyed how they work both in and out of the gym. So now, here's what you can do for our listeners. First-time purchasers are getting 20% off. All you have to do is go to Vuori.com/first. That's Vuori.com/first. Again, not only will you receive 20% off your first order, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75. And here's my favorite part, free returns. Yeah, go check it out. Vuori.com/first and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing. Did you know that more than 75% of Americans will experience foot pain in their lifetime, but only 10% will seek out a solution for that pain? Those numbers do not add up to me, and I know it can be confusing, the biomechanics of the foot, the bones, the muscles, everything in between, but solving foot pain is simple, and that's where Superfeet comes into play. These Superfeet insoles go into your shoes, give your feet comfort and support where they need it the most, and redistribute the forces that reduce both stress and strain through your entire body, not just your feet. Insoles have been phenomenal for me personally, and they are clinically proven to decrease fatigue, reduce injury, and improve comfort. I can attest to that myself, especially when walking a lot of golf holes that I play. So if you feel good, you play good, you look good, everything works out from there, and it starts from the bottom up. Visit superfeet.com and enter promo code FIRST at checkout for 15% off your first order plus free shipping.
And we're back. Here's the cheat sheet. And very small tiers everywhere, boys. The $10,000 range, only three of them. Scotty Scheffler's 10-9, John Rahm 10-7, Justin Thomas 10-2. That's it. Three golfers. Let's break it down. Sia, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite, it's not even a close call. It's John Rahm for me among the three. And I do want to point something out before we talk. I mean, obviously, it's a small tournament. Like you, Rick, I think you set the tone early when you said a lot of these guys are going to be popular and, you know, have a wide ownership. I want to encourage people to not, in tournaments like this, to not just consider playing the standard, like maybe bigger single entry or three max tournaments that you normally play. Like those are great. I'm going to play those too, but this might be a good time for you to experiment with other formats like four man winner take alls or double ups, which maybe you've decided you don't want to do in golf. You just want to play tournament style. I think when it comes to a tournament like this, when you know like a lot of the guys you like, a lot of other people are going to like, to me, it lends itself to playing some of those head-to-head, some of those four-man or 13-man or even 50-man tournaments or, 500-man double-ups, things of that nature. So I just want to point that out because you're not going to win many battles when it comes to having a great leverage play on the field. I mean, you can still construct your lineup in such a way that it's unique. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, when I say John Rahm's name, I think a lot of people are going to agree that in this tier, Rick, John Rahm is just crushing it. I mean, first of all, we see, thanks to RickRunGood.com, hopefully you all are watching us on YouTube, DP World Tour Championship, the CJ Cup, Open de España, like this guy, BMW PGA Championship, you know, he is absolutely killing it. And the strokes gained metrics, like, they are backing it up. So I don't really see an argument to take Scheffler or Justin Thomas over John Rahm unless you're just trying to be different. And frankly, as it pertains to Scheffler versus Rahm, I'm not sure how different those ownership percentages are going to be.
So if you've only been paying attention to the PGA Tour, you've missed three out of John Rahm's last four starts, including two victories and a runner-up finish, Greg. So there are a lot of guys, and especially as we go further down the list, there are some guys who basically we have not seen since the Tour Championship, or maybe they've played once at a CJ Cup or a Zozo. And then you've got guys like Matt Fitzpatrick and John Rahm and Victor Hovland who have played a lot since the Tour Championship. And Rahm has not only been playing a lot, but he's been playing well.
Yeah, very, very well. And he's answered the biggest questions about his game, which are in the short game category. So I think, you know, any way you slice it, whether you think recent form is the most important, whether you think course history is the most important, whether you think short game is the most important, John Rahm's going to be at the top of your list. And that's the sign of the all-around player. And when you start to look at his stats, even if you look at some of the scoring stats that Sia mentioned, when you have a strokes gained profile that looks like this, your scoring metrics are going to be fine in every area. When you have results like this, your scoring metrics are going to be fine in every area. So there is no reason to stray away from John Rahm here. I mean, how do you handle this, Sia? If he is one of those guys that's 52% owned, aside from, you know, contest selection, which I agree is very important, do you just bite the bullet and say, well, I can't be one of the 48% who misses out on him, or what do you do?
I mean, I guess to me, you in golf, you always want to lean towards the game theory play and fade John Rahm in that case. But then again, I think it depends on what contest you're in. I think if you're in a big contest, yeah, it absolutely makes sense. If he's going to be the highest owned guy, like a 9K and above, to just take him off your list, because we know the variance in golf. Any given Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, a guy like John Rahm could just not be very good. But it's going to be hard for me, especially some of the smaller field things that I intend to play this particular week. It's going to be hard for me to get off John Rahm. But to answer your question, if you're in a tournament with 5,000 people and you know that 50% of them are going to have John Rahm, you could still take him and try to get different elsewhere, but you may as well, if Justin Thomas is going to be, you know, 15% or 20% lower, it would make sense to just defer to somebody else.
The rest of this 10K range, if it's not Rahm, we've got to find something else, or we've got to take a stance here on Scotty Scheffler or Justin Thomas. So, Greg, I'll bounce this back to you here, and I'll tee up on JT, because what I see from his stat profile is a little bit concerning for somebody who's $10,200. He's back to the sour putter, which is not the huge concern, but I'm worried about this column right here, approach play. That's six straight events in which he's been pedestrian, and this used to be the elite skill set. Is this worrisome to you?
No, not this time of year. And with, you know, it's an interesting thing this time of year, because you mentioned it's six events. Now, JT is one of the guys that we haven't seen a lot of. It obviously didn't go very well in South Carolina. Which may be concerning, but then you start to look past that and you have a tour championship and you have the playoffs and you have that stretch where the game of golf is a lot different. You're coming up at the end of the season. Guys are gassed. They're they're done. Motivations change when you get into a staggered start format and it's been a long season and you won a major and you don't really feel like you have a chance to win. And I'm not saying that happened to JT. I'm just saying there's a lot of factors at the end of a season to consider. And then you go even back past that. You look at the Open Championship and the Scottish Open, which were the last two events in there. And now you're talking about Lynx Golf, where JT has not performed well at all. And whether it's the grass type or the firmness of the property, whatever the reasons may be, he hasn't had a lot of success there in the past. So it's not surprising to me, and I'm willing to look past that. That being said, this event has been okay for JT. He's had some really nice finishes, a couple of T5s and a couple of not so nice finishes, all at Albany. So, is there a Tiger Woods thing going on here where he feels like it's his buddy's tournament and maybe there's a little increase in pressure? I guess the moral of the story is I'm not concerned about the approach play. I love the style of play. I still am a little concerned with the putter, quite frankly.
Speaking of putting concerns, Scottie Scheffler falls into that category as well, doesn't he? And we've got a situation where over the last 50 rounds, Scottie Scheffler is the best tee to green player in the field, but he's giving a stroke back to Tony Finau on the putting surfaces alone. It's just a matter of if, when, and how that putter finds itself in his bag this week. That seems to be the driving force of what his results are going to be.
Yeah, and it's bad if you just look at the standard view of his putting since, let's go back to June of last year. I mean, this is a pretty bad look. I think Scotty's one of those guys that I'm not super worried about him bouncing back. I guess the question is he going to bounce back this tournament from a putting standpoint? And am I getting a discount? Am I getting an ownership break because I'm taking Scottie Scheffler? And I don't really know that the answer is going to be yes to that, because I think between Scottie and Justin Thomas, I think people are going to be way more inclined to play Scottie Scheffler. That's just a guess I'm making here on a Monday, but I'm not really big on him. I mean, honestly, I'm more inclined to start my lineups with Jon Rahm or just skip to the 9K range and start there.
Okay. Well, we can skip to the 9. Go ahead.
You know, there's an interesting thing with Scottie where the putting has clearly been a concern, but the results haven't really shown it. Unless, I mean, maybe Scotty's sitting there expecting to win. Maybe the expectations are getting high and this doesn't look great. But you go back to those playoffs where everybody's gassed and you're talking about a T3, a T2, a T3 and a T9. And there was also a tied 45th in South Carolina. But the results have been pretty good. They've definitely outpaced the putting performance. So as far as winning is concerned, I think putting is a really important thing. But the probability of him competing in this event and performing well, I think, is quite high.
Can I ask a question real quick? Because correct me if I'm wrong, Scotty did make a change to his putter somewhat recently, right?
He switched and then he switched back.
Okay. Well, what have been the results since he switched back? Because timeline-wise, I'm not sure when that
happened. Craig, correct me if I'm wrong. He switched to the mallet for the CJ Cup, lost 4.25, switched back on Saturday at Mayakoba, and we don't have the strokes gain metrics, but he shot the round of the day on Sunday and then had the same blade in hand for Houston, in which he lost two strokes. Is that right, Greg?
Yes, you got it. You're spot on. And the interesting thing about Houston was I believe he just lost a little bit every round. And I mean, it still leads to a T9, but are you pulling off the?
Yeah, I'll pull. And does that make a difference to you, Greg, as opposed to seeing one big loss? Or yeah, so he lost. Let's see, round one, 3/4 of a stroke, a little less than one in round two, 1/4 of a stroke he lost in round three, and 1/4 of a stroke he lost in round four.
Yeah, and so I think that's kind of it's okay, right? This is where Colin Morikawa would really like to be at this point. So I don't think that's a situation where you're, breaking your putter over your knee. It probably just feels like it's on the comeback trail. And I haven't seen enough evidence to say that it is on the comeback trail, especially without statistics from Mayakoba. But because of the results, I still believe in Scotty's confidence. I believe in the rest of his game enough, and I'm willing to take a chance. I'm probably higher on Scotty than I am on JT, just because of what he's done results wise, in spite of that putt-in. And if we're looking at him as a Colin Morikawa or somebody else with these results, knowing there's a weakness in his game, which there has been since the Masters, I think this is like a team no putt hero, right? And everybody would be all over him, but he was world number one. He won four tournaments in a row. He won the Masters, and he accomplished so much in such a short period of time. I think our expectations changed. But if this guy was still looking for his first win, I think everybody would be salivating over him, and I think his price would be a lot lower. So I don't know. It looks like we lost Chick for a minute here.
We did, but I agree with the sentiment. I want to ask you, while we're waiting for Rick to come back, can we just go to the 9K range real quick? Because my thought here is, if I started a lineup with Xander and Tony Finau, like, to me, that's almost like where I want to start in my non-John Rahm lineups, whether it's a cash, like whether it's a double up or like a small entry field. Why can't I just start there?
Well, and we do have Rick back. Sorry. But I think you can start there. I mean, if these guys were in the 10K range, I don't think anybody would be surprised.
Right. I think that's the point. I think that's the larger point I'm making is, you know, Rick, you always talk about this. And so now, like, it's something that I think we talk about on this show a lot, where you have to put somebody in a price tier. People have to fall into little slots. And we could have made this 10K range five deep, and we could have had Xander. Well, certainly we could have had Tony Finau up there. Maybe you make a lesser argument for Xander. Maybe not. I'm not really sure. But the fact that Tony's 9,300 and Xander's 9,900 is about as arbitrary as you can possibly be as it relates to Justin Thomas being 10,200, right?
Right. And let's just go to those guys, and I'll try to avoid. I literally just pulled the rookie mistake and clicked leave studio. And I was like, oh, well.
He hates us.
Now I'm.
I knew it.
Wow. I'm so
Greg, I talked to you about this.
It's been 2 years since I've done that. Yeah. The 9,000.
I guess you didn't like my take.
It was so bad. I just ejected myself from the conversation. Xander Schauffele, 9,900. Tony Finau, 93. Greg, I could argue Tony Finau is the best / hottest player in this field. He's $9,300. Xander is here. You feel like in a no-cut event, he's never really going to get you in trouble, even though he hasn't had a ton of success around here. What do we do with these two guys?
Yeah, I think, to me, I'm very curious to see what ownership is and if there's a significant lean either way. But Tony Finau's game is really hard to ignore. And one of the really underrated aspects of his game is his short game. And this is starting to shape up to be a kind of a John Rahm like talent. A John Rahm like profile. When you look at his success across the board, I mean, it's elite driving. It's very good iron play. The short game, I think, has been underrated for his entire career. And right now it's been really good. I mean, you're talking about what, five out of the last six events, he's gained strokes around the green.
Yeah,
which is a great sign. The putting is obviously the biggest improvement that he's made. But I think short game's a real asset for Tony Finau. So I really like the form that he comes in on. And if you were to say that Tony Finau is your guy, looking at this without, this is a Tony Finau week, which it very well could be, then I see no reason not to start a lineup with him if you're not going to go John Rahm.
Last 24 rounds, there's only three golfers who are gaining at least 1.8 strokes per round. Xander's at 2.08. Finau's at 2.85. John Rahm, 3.04. So a lot of firepower here, Sia. Guys that are hot, guys that are outpacing the field significantly more than their peers.
Yeah, I mean, Tony Finau at 9,300. There's really, truly not an argument to make against Tony Finau in this particular tournament with this particular setup, how hot he's been, how he rates out in whatever metrics you're looking at. I mean, he's number one in my model, and not that my model is like the best model out there. But honestly, it's I've got him and Xander 1 and 2. And that's part of the reason I'm thinking, you know, the pricing is relatively arbitrary. I think both of these guys could actually finish this tournament 1 and 2. But no matter how you look at it, whether it's the classic stroke gain metrics or the scoring stats, Tony Finau in particular, just he's like number one in so many different of these stats. And then, you know, Xander kind of trails. If you go back 36 rounds, there's a couple things like around the green. He hasn't been great. The putter's been okay. Driving distance. He's, you know, not he's basically middling there, but everything else, he's hitting home runs for the most part. I like both of these guys quite a bit. And I'll tell you this. I think I can just scan the field here, and I don't want to get too far afield here, but there's two guys that I think are going to be the most popular guys on this slate. Yeah, we're just knowing no other information other than just looking at the pricing and how these guys rate out in my model. I think Tony Finau is one of those two. And I think the other one is 7K or below. Do you guys want to guess who I think the second most popular guy could be in this field?
Oh, yeah. I know.
Yeah. Tom Kim.
Yes.
Interesting. Okay. That's a really good guess. But because of course fit issues that he may have, I was going to say Cameron Young.
I thought about Cameron Young for half a second, but we're gonna get to Tom Kim. It's pretty outrageous what he's. It's a very small sample size, but it is.
I totally
outrageous.
Agree. I think Tom Kim, Cameron Young, and Colin Morikawa all are going to be very, very popular. I have a feeling it's going to be Young over Kim, but you might be right. But either way, my larger point is Finau is going to be really popular, and it's going to be for very good reason.
Xander's one of these guys, Greg, that we saw Tour Championship. President's Cup, Zozo. That's it. Any concerns? Like sometimes we see guys, you know, they got to play a couple rounds to get into it. What do we think about the Zandy man?
No, I think Xander's fine. Ready to go. I'm kind of surprised at his results here. They've been not great, but also, I mean, they're not terrible. It's not terrible. You're talking about all top 12 finishes in a field like this. So you're not really contending to win, but you know, you're still beating six guys at least. but it's such a strange thing. You know, you look at, well, all right, 11 of these top players in the world beat you, you know, boo hoo, but you only beat six guys. So it's a very unique set of circumstances, but overall, big picture, I think Xander's game fits really well here. He should have a lot of success. He has plenty of distance. I think when Xander's on his game, his short game is, you know, right up there with the best in the world. It hasn't been lately. You look at the Tour Championship and the BMW, and it wasn't great, but I don't really look at that as a concern. So I think the upside for Xander Schauffele is not as high as it is for Finau. Or anyone in the 10K or 9K range. But I do think Xander's a pretty safe play.
Last 36, as I mentioned, those three guys at the top, Finau, Rahm, Xander, all gaining over two strokes per round, all gaining across the board in each of the four major categories. It's scary, scary stuff for those three. We're going to find some value in this field, and we're going to start with the defending champion. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And we're back. $8,000 tier here. And it's Victor Hovland at $8,700. Matt Fitzpatrick at 83. Sia Najad. That's it. Two golfers in the eights. What do we do?
Yeah. So here's one thing I'll say. I think if you play both of these guys, your lineup's definitely going to be different. I think I think a lot of people are just going to skip those two guys, quote, skip this range, which again is only two people deep, but I don't think people are going to be playing both of them. So I just think that's something to consider. Between Hovland and Matt Fitzpatrick, I'm probably more likely to play Matt Fitzpatrick. For one, he rates out a little bit better for me, even though I understand the Hovland's the defending champion. But Matt Fitzpatrick rates out a little bit better, you know, last 36 rounds. And I think he'll be slightly less around because first of all, he's typically not as popular as Hovland, I don't think. But also, I just don't think he's going to have the ownership relative to Hovland. So I think that's probably where I'm going. What is he really good at? I mean, the strokes gained par five. I mean, we know he can get it out there. He's added some distance, but the strokes gained par five, I have him number two last 36 rounds. So that's something I'm certainly emphasizing. And he rates out really well there off the tee, as you can imagine. I've got him top five last 36 rounds there too.
Last 50, Fitzpatrick, the fourth best player in this field. Last 100, I bet you he's even better, third in this field behind Scottie Scheffler and Jon Rahm. Greg, we have to really consider Matt Fitzpatrick. I mean, 100 rounds, that's a year's worth for a lot of these guys. He has entered a completely different echelon of golfer.
Yes, and he's time and time again just proved why. And he has been incredibly valuable any way you look at it. I think there's a style that he has off the tee where you could argue he's a top five driver of the golf ball in the game. He is not as long as, you know, your typical top five drivers. And he may not appear to dominate a golf course with the driver, but he is so automatic off the tee. And it just gives you great confidence. I know he's at a distance. He's still not one of the longer players out there, though. But he is so accurate. And he's kind of become this blend of, like, you know, Jordan Spieth kind of distance, but with top 10 accuracy on the PGA Tour. And it's just a lethal combination. He's had a great putting season. He's made some real improvements in his short game with the cack-handed chipping, as he calls it. And I mean, he is an all-around stud. So yeah, Matt Fitzpatrick, you're absolutely right, has entered a different class.
Both Matt Fitzpatrick and Victor Hovland, Sia, playing for the seventh time since the Tour Championship. These guys have hardly taken a week off. Victor's results, they're okay, right? He's got the T5 at the Zozo. He has the T5 at the BMW PGA Championship. He was a top 10 finisher in his title defense at Mayakoba. The ball striking numbers aren't as good as we would normally like to see from Victor, but he has improved in the short game categories. Where do we kind of rate up on the defending champ this week?
Yeah, it's this profile that, again, if you're watching us on YouTube, this doesn't speak to us, right? I mean, we're talking about the best golfers in the world. And I understand when you're talking about the best golfers in the world, you know, they can bounce back at any given moment. But given the state of his game and the state of the competition at the Hero World Challenge, this is why I'd much prefer to defer to Matt Fitzpatrick. That profile really spoke to me because there were some tournaments where, I mean, we saw some miscuts in there and some really bad approach play from Matt Fitzpatrick, but that was just, you know, few and far between. His putter has been lights out. And again, I'm talking about Fitzpatrick. I don't see that from Victor Hovland. I don't see any sort of lights out scenario where we see guys like Matt Fitzpatrick and a lot of other people that are, let's say, 7,500 and above that have just these lightning rod green metrics across the board. And I don't see it with Hovland. So I just don't think I'm willing to take the chance here. If Hovland was where Hovland's 8,700 and Morikawa's 6,900. You know what I'm saying? Like, if Hovland was somewhere down where Morikawa was, then I think it's a different conversation. But I don't see the reason to play Hovland at that price unless you're getting a major ownership discount, which of course you're not going to get because everybody likes to play Hovland and he's the defending champion.
Victor Hovland, sixth most expensive golfer in the field and the sixth best in strokes gained total over the last 24 rounds. Pretty fair price on the defending champ. Let's go to a larger group of golfers, Greg, in the 7K range. Sungjae Im, 7,800. Jordan Spieth, 75. Tommy Fleetwood, 73. Then we rounded out with Sam Burns at 72 and Shane Lowry at 7,000. Okay, let's assume we can't play them all. So let's pick one or two out of here.
Yeah, it's a massive range. So, of course, yeah, you can't massive, play them
huge,
all.
Huge.
but I'm most interested in the bottom two players in this range. Tommy Fleetwood's interesting, too. I mean, they all are to their own degree. And I have a feeling that Sia is going to talk a little about Tommy Fleetwood. But I'll start with Sam Burns. Why am I so interested in him? One, we already talked about he gave away this tournament last year. With one incident on, I think it was like the 14th hole where he started playing ping pong back and forth. That can do a couple of things to a player. One, it can make you really nervous and fearful, and you can look at those swales and say, oh boy, I don't want to go down there again. And the other thing it can do is create a little chip on your shoulder. And in an event like this where motivation is questionable. I mean, they're all competitive, but are you gearing up for this event the same way that you are for the Century Tournament of Champions, right? The start to the calendar season. Are you gearing up the same way? And I think that's a question for every player in this field.
I'll tell you what, Greg, we're gearing up the same way. You're getting the same coverage here for the Hero and the Tournament of Champions and everything in between, bud.
Yeah, but I do think that's an important thing to consider when you're looking at this from a fantasy perspective. How are these guys preparing? Are we going to get their real potential in an event like this? And you got to comb through this to get the right guys. Because I always see in a limited field like this where there's no cut, kind of this split between the guys that are in contention who are highly motivated because they want to win and the guys that aren't playing well, and they tend to kind of taper off. And you start to see that split. So what side of the split are you going to get on? If Sam Burns gets himself into contention, I think you're going to start to see that there's a little chip on his shoulder. He wants a little revenge. He wants to get back at what happened last year. Even though nobody talks about it and it's kind of a forgotten thing, it's likely not forgotten for him. But then you have the Houston Open, which was just a disaster of a performance.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think that should be a huge deal. I think Sam Burns is very interesting for that. But yeah, I mean, then you also look at what he did in South Carolina, and he gained 9 strokes on the greens. So he's not really hitting it all that great. But I know he has a great record here in his one start.
He's got a great record on Bermuda. So what Greg's alluding to in Houston is the worst putting performance of Sam Burns' career by a mile, and he did it in only 31 holes, Greg. He didn't even play the final five. He was like, right, I got to get out of here and save the stats.
Yeah. And I mean, look at what he did the week before.
Right? I know. It's a 15 shot difference.
A 15 shot difference between two tournaments back to back. See, that's not what Sam Burns does on the greens. He is not a volatile putter.
No, he's not.
He's a very consistent putter. One of the best on the PGA Tour, and really always has been. The real change in his game came with his iron play. So, look, I think Sam Burns has all the tools to perform well here. I don't think he's going to be overly popular. I think he's an interesting guy to take a chance on.
The rest of the 7K range, Greg kind of mentioned someone else at the bottom, Shane Lowry. He's $7,000. His advanced metrics are phenomenal. And again, another one of these golfers where if you're not paying attention to the DP World Tour, you would have missed a big time victory from Shane Lowry a couple of weeks ago. Sia, this 7K range is all yours. What do you like here?
Yeah, there's three guys, and Lowry's definitely one of them. He really popped to me. But at the top of that 7K range, Sungjae Im, who has not played this tournament, which it just doesn't bother me. It's just a fact to know. I think Sungjae Im sets up really well here. In my model, he's actually fourth. And strokes gained par five, again, that's something I keep talking about. He's number one there last 36 rounds. Off the tee, he's inside the top five. Putting, obviously, we know he's a Bermuda putter, but he's been great with the putter as of late as well, can get red hot there. So Sungjae, I love at 7,800. And then, yeah, Greg mentioned Tommy Fleetwood. And, you know, I'm not a Tommy Fleetwood guy, but there are certain things that are just impossible to ignore. And so there's two things here as we pull it up on YouTube. We've got the approach play, which is just unbelievable. I mean, he's got a bad putter strewn about in there. I'm not really worried about that. The putter's been great. But the finishing positions as well. Again, DP World Tour Championship, Ned Bank Golf Challenge, the CJ Cup, fifth, first, T4. Like, this is something where we're seeing sort of the Tommy Fleetwood of old, and it is impossible to ignore these ball striking and putting numbers. It's just impossible.
Yeah, if you like a really small sample, like 12 rounds, it's John Rahm number one, Tommy Fleetwood number two. Tommy Fleetwood, over his last two tournaments, has lost a total of 4 strokes putting, has a win and a fifth place finish. That should help describe how good he's striking it, Greg.
Yes, and he has a great short game and always has.
Yes.
Again, he's struggled with putting, and this happens all the time where guys who struggle on the greens, their short game gets lumped into that. And that's just not the case for Tommy Fleetwood. He's been a very high-quality short game player who's had his fair share of struggles with the putter. But aside from the last 2 weeks, the putter really has been cooperative. So it's not a concern for me. And I think he's a really interesting player, hard to ignore. Oh, and by the way, his record here isn't bad either.
Yeah, it's been a while, right? But his last time he played it was really good.
2017, he came and tied third.
Yeah.
Gained 5.3 shots, which honestly, if you look at the winners' strokes gained total numbers here, they are not really above, they're single digits. You see single digit winners here.
Correct. Yeah. When Rahm won it, I think he gained like 8 strokes or 9 strokes to the field. So you don't have to have, as you can imagine, you don't have to have a ceiling 17 strokes gained performance to beat 150 guys. You got to gain like 8 or 9 and beat 19.
Right. And that can win. Now, I think John Rahm also has like an 8 where he gained 8 strokes. And yeah, when he won, he gained 9.89 and he came in second with 8.17.
Yes.
But there are plenty of years where 8.17 would have won. So it's just interesting.
I think the other thing about Fleetwood that really matters is that he's played these 3 tournaments that we're just bandying about, like that we're talking about, that he's just crushed it. Those have all happened within the last 30, 35 days. So we have questions about some of these guys who just haven't played in a while. We don't know what type of form they're going to be in. You know, we can kind of make a guess. Are they going to be good? Are they going to be rusty? We're just guessing there. But with Tommy Fleetwood, there's no guesswork. We know he's coming in hot. We know he is arriving on this course thinking, I'm one of the hotter players in golf right this moment. And yeah. I think that carries some weight here.
And also in the motivation thing, sorry, Rick.
Nope.
We talked about motivation for players coming in. And when you're like a Tommy Fleetwood on a comeback trail and you're just starting to gain confidence and you believe you can win, this is an opportunity that you don't really care what the stakes are. You just want every chance you can to prove to yourself how strong your game is. So I think Tommy Fleetwood's on a mission this year with being a Ryder Cup year and given the struggles that he's had over the last couple of years, I think he wants back in the game. And this is just a chance to play with some great players on a nice stage to go and get the job done.
I think he's got the most tread on the tires. I think this is his 8th start since he did not play the tour championship, but since like that ended, this is going to be his 8th start. So he's played a lot this fall, which you could look at it in a lot of ways. Doesn't seem to be hurting him because he's peaking right now. The game's real fit. I think we have to at least consider Jordan Spieth here at 7,500. I have said, Sia, that I would not be surprised to see him win this. I would not be surprised to see him finish dead last. In fact, he has actually accomplished both of those feats, right? He finished dead last here last year, 16th the year before. We didn't play this in 2020. He won it in 2014. He's got a bunch of other great finishes at Albany after that. I mean, it's just like, I have zero idea where this guy's going to finish this week.
Yeah, and I think part of the thing that complicates that, if you could pull up his profile just to see what the putter has been like, because that's horrible. Something that I think is going to be hard to reconcile when you're trying to debate the merits of playing Jordan Spieth
here. This is basically by far the worst putting year of his career. Not even close.
Right. He did talk about this after the Ryder President's Cup, where he, of course, went 5-0. And he was feeling a lot closer with it. And yeah, that's another caveat to throw in here. Like, we haven't seen him. We saw him at the CJ Cup and it wasn't great, but at the President's Cup, he didn't lose. Anyway, he did talk about how he was feeling really close. So was that a peak? Is this like a little time off? And then he's going to try to peak again for the start of the season. I don't know where he is with his schedule. So I agree. I'm kind of throwing my hands up in the air with Spieth. I don't know where to put him. And for that reason, I'm out.
Oh, do you watch Shark Tank? Yeah, baby.
Yeah, I like that show.
Yeah, it's so
good. It's a great show.
$6,000 range. Here are the big names that could be fairly popular. Colin Morikawa is $6,900. Cameron Young is $6,700. Max Homa, new proud dad, 66. Morikawa just got married. Homa just and his wife just had a baby. Tom Kim, now two-time winner, 6,500. Corey Connors just added to the field, 6,300. Billy Horschel at 61 and Kevin Kisner at $6,000. That's the entirety of the $6,000 range. No Sepp Straka as of yet. I imagine if he gets in this field, he'll be slotted somewhere in here, Sia. But what do we do with the current state of the 6Ks?
I'm glad you went to me first because there's only a couple guys I like here. I mean, I'm probably going to be willing to play more than a couple because these two are probably going to be pretty popular. But I like Cameron Young. I like Tom Kim. I think Cameron Young sets up really well for this particular course. I mean, certainly if you're looking at driving distance and off the tee, he's going to absolutely crush it relative to the field there. The around the green game has actually been pretty good. The scoring stats are pretty good, not great. Birdie or better is good. So I just think Cameron Young's in a position getting four rounds to really pile up the scoring potentially, to really take advantage of the par fives. As I say that, I look at his strokes gained par fives last 36. It's not amazing. But again, I think Cameron Young at this price is in a really good spot. And Tom Kim, even though he is a shorter hitter and probably the shortest hitter in this entire field, it's so hard for me to make an argument against him, especially at this price. We'll have to see where his ownership ends up being. But I just think Tom Kim has shown us that he can win pretty much anywhere.
Luckily, Kevin Kisner is in this field, or else Tom Kim would definitely be the shortest player in the field. The Tom Kim stuff is outrageous, Greg. Right. Two wins in his last six starts, a T11 at the CJ Cup, you know, the FedEx St. Jude in Memphis, the playoff event. It was a T13 there. Last 36 rounds. Here's the top five players in the field. 36 rounds, strokes gained total. It's about as pure as you can get. Tony Finau, John Rahm, Xander Schauffele, Scottie Scheffler, Tom Kim. Tom Kim is like $2,800 cheaper than the next cheapest of those guys.
Right. And that is going to be a very kind of shiny toy down in the 6K range.
It's got my attention.
So, yeah. And I understand that if you're looking at this and you're disregarding ownership, you're in a head to head or something, one of those smaller contests that C is mentioning, Tom Kim is a no brainer. I know that he'll be really excited to have the opportunity to play in this event. I don't think he's going to be, I think he's going to come in ready to go. He's hungry. He's fiery. He wants trophies right now, as they all do. But I think what you've seen out of Tom Kim with this ball striking has just simply been elite. And because his long iron play is so good, I worry a lot less about his distance. His accuracy is so good. I worry a lot less about his distance. That combination makes up for himself. I mean, he can hit a two iron. I mean, it has a lot of Morikawa in it with the, you know, lack of distance, but a very high degree of accuracy with both driver and the irons. So yeah, there's nothing not to like about Tom Kim. And it's very interesting to see Colin Morikawa, Cameron Young, and Max Homa in the 6K range. Mm-hmm. So I think they're very attractive too. But I think if you want to get different, a guy you could look at is a Billy Horschel.
Yeah.
there may be some similarities between this place and Congaree. Maybe minor, but I could see some similarities. And Billy Horschel at Congaree finished tied seventh. He gained six strokes approaching the green. Now, Mayakoba didn't go great for him, but I think this style of play will fit Billy Horschel's game. And I'm very interested in him because I think he's just been playing really well. Now, this hasn't been a great event for him in the past, although, what, did he play here once?
I think he's only played at Albany once. He played here in 15 and then he played here in 14. 15, yeah. I believe, was the first year Greg at Albany. So he finished 16th out of 18 or 20. It was horrible. And then T8 the year before, but that was 7 years ago.
And at Sherwood. Yeah. So I'm kind of looking past that. But I think this could really be a good fit for him. He drove the ball great this year.
The other thing is he's got three top tens in his last four starts worldwide. Right.
Right.
So, I mean, and he's nearly the min price.
I think he and Kisner are going to be kind of forgotten, especially, mm-hmm. I mean, you have guys that could win major championships sitting in the 6K range, right? I mean, you have elite players in the 6K range, and Horschel and Kisner are kind of just tagged in there at the very end. So there's no question some risk. Could Billy Horschel finish dead last in this tournament? Yeah, he could. But I have a feeling he's going to step up and perform this week.
I mean, at $6,100, if he finishes like 15th out of 20 or out of 19, like you might have gotten away with it. Like it might not be the end of the world.
Right.
In that same vein, I mean, this is a name that might be a little bit more popular than Billy Horschel in terms of ownership, but probably gets a little unrecognized. Corey Connors. I kind of want to get y'all's thoughts on Corey in this one.
If you like long term, that's where I think you're at. I mean, it hasn't been great. It's getting better, right? I mean, he played the CJ Cup. He gained over three strokes on approach. We know he was pretty horrendous at the President's Cup, bad at the Fortinet, bad at the Tour Championship. So it's been kind of awkward. But if you go and look at like last 100, and I bet you ball striking stuff, you know, like he's the fifth best ball striker in the field over the last 100 rounds. Mm. And he's a positive putter, which I don't think a lot of people would have guessed for Corey Connors. So I'm probably more excited than most are.
I think I am too. That's part of the reason I brought him. At 6,300, he certainly makes sense potentially as a pivot from Tom Kim, or maybe you have both of them in your lineup because you go heavy up top.
It's been like 6 weeks since he's played. So you just got to hope he's like got it all figured out, Greg.
And he's like boring, right? This is a field of guys that have a lot of volatility or just massive consistency sitting near the top of leaderboards. But I think that boring aspect of Corey Connors could actually play into your favor and you could get that ownership discount that Sia has been talking about. I love that phrase, by the way.
Sepp Straka, just real quick here. Sepp Straka has missed 9 of his last 15 cuts. I don't know what he's going to be priced if he does get into this field. However, he has 2 runner-up finishes in the middle. I don't get golf. I don't understand how this happens. I don't know what to do with Sepp Straka, but I'm just going to read the facts off the screen then.
Yeah. I mean, depending on how late he gets added, and I'm sure it'll be tonight or tomorrow morning, but the later he gets added, the less likely people are going to be making lineups with him. So maybe that's a consideration. This is a tough scene though. This really is a tough scene.
I have to actually clarify, 2 of the cuts that he technically made were no cut events where he lost 5 strokes at the CJ Cup and lost 1.5 at the Zozo. So it's probably even worse, Greg, than I was laying out.
Yeah. I mean, what is it? Either a second place or a miscut.
it's like second place or dead last.
Yeah. It's brutal. And this is a brutal kind of thing to pick. I generally stay away from this kind of volatility in general. I know it can be exciting. And if it hits and he's in the mix on Sunday, you're going to be thrilled. But I think it's shown that it's, you know, the thing that really bothers me about this is I think he's so much better than this, and it makes it hard to watch because your expectations can get really high. And you watch him in these events when he's playing well and he's so good and it looks so easy and it just falls apart. So it's a hard thing for me to track. So I generally just stay away from that kind of thing.
Okay. Anything else before we suspend all logic and reason and go to our stroke skate narrative lineups?
Nope.
Going twice. All right. Let's do it. So we throw out the strokes gained narrative lineup options. What do we have, Troy? All right. Ryan, the fantasy bunker says the exclusive Albany resort is owned by billionaire Joe Lewis, not the boxer, right? Probably a different Joe Lewis.
Yeah. Joe Lewis is spelled differently. The boxer.
Here are some other famous billionaires with a B. Tom Kim Kardashian. We are off to a great start.
Yes.
Sung J-Z-M. Doesn't Ooh. Get much better than that. Kevin McMahon Kisner.
The coach would love that one.
Coach would love yeah. that. That's a good crossover there. Fleetwood. Kanye. Although he's probably no longer a billionaire at this point, right?
At least maybe still is. I don't know.
Tough. Defense.
Certainly lost a couple of Bs.
Yes. So this one might not last much longer for Kanye. How about this one? Corianna Connors. Is Rihanna a billionaire?
That would surprise me.
A bill?
May have just heard something about that. I mean, I think Ryan probably did his research on this one.
Okay, according to Google.
Well, good for her.
If you just type in Rihanna net worth, I don't know how it finds this out, but it says Rihanna's net worth is $1.4 billion with a B.
Wow. Good for you, Rihanna. Rihanna.
Not even 1.1. She's like tracking towards 2. That's amazing. Yeah.
Well, she's only got, 400 million more than a billion?
Yeah, and she's also... Oh, and we're like the same age. So she's doing pretty good. She's only 34. I think she's got it figured out.
Wow.
Solid. And then Max Ho Madonna. Although I looked up Madonna's net worth. She's got to sell more Madonna mics, Greg, because I only have her at 850 million.
What is she doing? All that talent. It's disappointing.
I mean, it was like the 80s where she was a shining star. So it's been a minute.
Does she still tour? How old do you think Madonna is?
Ooh, good question. I'm going to take a guess at this one. She's up there. I know that much.
I know the answer.
I'll go with 67.
That's pretty good.
Really?
64.
Oh, wow.
Damn, I overshot it.
I was going to say 59.
Well, she'll like your answer more, Greg. We'll send her the clip.
Yeah, and I was going on the old side.
Yeah, we'll send her the clip. That's pretty good, Ryan. I like that. That's, well done there.
Very
so
good.
Chris, by the way, we are getting the Netflix doc soon. So Chris is saying these are the guys that we want to watch most on the Netflix doc. Pretty straightforward. It's Tiger. It's Victor. It's Billy, because he's going to talk about the live defectors. Lowry seems fun. Cam Young, because as Chris says, chicks dig the long ball, and Tony Finau's got that busy home life. So Chris is excited about those six, and I believe you can roster them all pretty easily.
Yeah, well, I like it.
Don't play Tiger, but
not a good idea.
Don't play Tiger.
Maybe we'll just replace him with Sepp Straka.
Yeah, exactly. No problem.
No problems there. what do we got next, Troy? Okay, I knew we were going to get a Thanksgiving dinner lineup. This is courtesy of Eric. All turkeys are named Tom. Tom Kim, Corny Connors. So Connors makes another appearance. Yammerin' Young. Do you like yams, Greg?
I think Thanksgiving food's overrated.
Wow. That's a big
I call. Like it. I like it all. It's overrated.
I agree.
Okay, you guys are crazy. But here's the thing. Just real quick. I love stuffing, mashed potatoes, and turkey. I don't like anything else. Don't give me mac and cheese. Don't give me cranberry sauce. I don't need the pumpkin pie or whatever other pie you're having. I just need the basics, and I'm good. I'm good for days on that.
How many times a year?
I don't need pie.
How many times a year do you eat stuffing?
So I used to be a Boston Market guy. So I would have stuffing all the time, like two or three times a week. Now I don't go to Boston Market as much because I think they're like closing shop.
And oh, that's so disappointing. I like Boston Market.
I haven't seen a Boston Market in 20 years.
It is delicious. It is so underrated. The Boston Market is so underrated.
I agree. And I like I mean, I love turkey. But, I mean, I have it, you know, 3 days a week for lunch. Mm. You know, I know this is a different thing. I totally get that. But it's so regular. I think mashed potatoes are fine. But they're just fine. I mean, I'm not salivating over mashed potatoes.
Okay, and just tell your brother.
You know,
Thanksgiving tip though, you can't just have mashed potatoes with like gravy. Just have mashed potatoes, mix in some of the stuffing or the turkey or all three. That's a lot of pop in one bite. Trust me on this one.
All right, I'll try it. Maybe I can do something to make it different than, you know, a regular dinner.
Speaking of, Tommy Fleet, would you pass the stuffing, please? Shane being from Ireland, he has to be the mashed potatoes, right? Lowry. And maximum abundance of food and football in our Homa, Max Homa. And then finally, John Markowski finishes us off here with a Hero World Challenge haiku. Now, a haiku that has specific syllable requirements. Is that correct?
Yeah. You know, I learned about these a long time ago.
I believe it's 575 is what a haiku is.
Yes. A short form of poetry originating in Japan, 17 words, 575, syllables. Here we go. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm just going to read it. I have no idea what this is. From John. Tree burns in the woods. Young boy Homa in his ROM. Wind whispers softly. Is that moving to anyone?
I mean, haikus are one of those things where like they have to be moving no matter what. So you could have put anywhere, as long as it's 575 and you read it in a certain way, it's moving. But the thing is, we got to move woods out of there. So it's going to be tree burns in the sep. Young boy Homa in his ROM. Wind whispers softly.
Now I'm moved.
There we go. Now we're talking.
Deep.
I will refresh DraftKings one more time to see if Sepp Straka has been added. And I will tell you that the answer is no.
I've got him added on mine. He's 3,700.
I'll roster him. I'll take it. Deal. 3,700 deal. All right, Jets. So business as usual this week. Megapod Tuesday, recap Sunday, and I don't know. I guess we'll have to talk about Tiger and everything else that's going on in the world. Crazy stuff. Sia Najad, available on Twitter at Sia Najad. Producer Troy does all the hard work behind the scenes. Greg Ducharme can be found at The Real GFD, and you can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut, and we'll catch you next time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.